Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Crystal Miller. Crystal, it's wonderful to have you with me.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Once again, we're going to start at the beginning. Where were you born?
Well, I consider myself a third culture kid. And I was born in Obihiro, Japan.
What were your parents doing there?
They were on a three-year volunteer mission assignment to Japan. And then they came back for a much longer assignment soon afterwards.
So when you were born, how long after you were born did you actually live there?
I lived in Japan till I was 17. They tell me there's a little Made in Japan sticker on my back. I've never seen it, but it's my first language. We used English at home. We spoke Japanese outside of the home. We did come back to the United States when I was in middle school for a little bit, for 2 years, but mostly all in Japan.
How many siblings do you have and where do you fit in the family?
I'm the oldest of two. I have a brother that's 2 years younger.
Growing up in Japan, you probably didn't realize that this was different from what your American cousins were doing. Tell me a little bit about what you did as a young child. What did you do for fun?
I assume it's not too different with what American kids did, but we had playground games. We rode our bikes all over. We had little games we played with rubber bands strung together or drawings on the dirt, which involved some form of tag, kick the can, you know, just neighborhood kids gathering and doing fun things.
Were you living in a city, in a village? What was that like?
I was born in Obihiro, and that's a fairly small town, but then we moved to Sapporo, which is quite a large town in Hokkaido, Japan.
Did you have neighbors close by? It would be like maybe a suburban neighborhood?
Oh, yeah. The houses were very close together and just an alley in front, and then there'd be more houses. But then fairly close by, there was a park, which was mostly dirt, but it was open space where we ran around and rode our bikes and all that.
And were most of your friends Japanese?
Yeah, all my friends were Japanese because I went to a Japanese public school. And there were no really Americans around. The missionaries did gather now and then for conferences. And so then there were other missionary, Mennonite missionary children. And yeah, I related to those people too. As I got older, in high school, I was in an American school in Japan, and there I had other American friends.
Was English one of the subjects in school in those earlier grades?
In Japanese school? Yeah, it was. I was exempt from that.
So is it safe to say that you grew up speaking both languages fluently?
Yeah, I spoke both languages fluently. My Japanese accent is indistinguishable from a Japanese person. And yeah, we studied English at home and Japanese in school. So I tried to keep up with both languages.
At what point in your life did you realize what an amazing thing it was to be bilingual?
Much later. I suppose after I was an adult. Well, no, there was a big benefit when I went to college because they exempted me from the foreign language requirement and gave me a lot of credits for time spent overseas, and that actually got me out of college early. So I guess that's when I quickly realized there was a benefit to all that.
I assume that your parents were there with some Mennonite organization. Which one was that?
Mennonite Board of Missions.
Tell me about church growing up.
Well, there was a church in Sapporo that they related to. They were not the pastors, but we were parishioners, just very involved. It was a wonderful group, Shiroishi Kiristo Kyokai, Shiroishi Mennonite Church. And church, we met in a room that had tables. So everybody sat at chairs in front of tables so they could take notes, open their Bible. But as a child, that allowed me to bring things to draw with. So that was super handy. We always had lunch after church that involved usually peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and potato salad or sometimes some soup. It was a very close group, really wonderful people that were family to us in Japan.
That food sounds pretty American.
Yeah, that's what they did.
So what were your parents actually doing during the week?
They were inspired by John Howard Yoder's model of being tent makers, where the missionaries were not supported by congregations in the U.S., but actually worked in the local economy and were affected by all the things the people that they lived with were affected by. So my father, he was a teacher, or he was licensed to teach. He was actually all set to teach English in Goshen High School and actually had a contract when they decided to go to Japan. So he had those skills. So he taught English at a college in Sapporo, Hokusei Gakuen. And my mother was at home, but, you know, both of them did Bible studies and taught English in a way that often led to Bible study.
I assume that your father was being paid, and was that the money that you were living on, basically?
Right.
You weren't being supported by...
We were not supported by the mission. We were supported by his salary as a professor at the college.
Tell me about these 2 years of middle school. Was that a bit of a culture shock for you to be, and where was that in the U.S. that you were back?
Well, we came back for 2 years so my father could work on his PhD, and so he wanted to do that at University of Iowa. They were originally from Iowa, so we moved to Iowa City for 2 years. Yeah, it was a culture shock. I was put in the public school, middle school. I don't know. Middle school is difficult, I suppose, for anybody at any place. But I mean, I survived. I loved orchestra. That was my orchestra teacher was my idol for many years. I thought maybe that was what I was going to do. And the church people there were wonderful. We associated with First Mennonite Church in Iowa City and had a lot of friends there.
That's a perfect segue because I wanted to ask you about music, because we at Portland Mennonite associate you with music. Did you have instruments in your home in Japan, or tell me how this music thing got started for you?
Yeah. At a very early age, apparently, I asked for music or piano lessons. And I'm not quite sure why we had a piano in the house, but we did. I think it was there before I asked for piano lessons. So I started piano lessons around age 5, I think, with a Japanese piano teacher, and took piano lessons into high school, all the way through high school. At some point, my mother decided I really should take violin lessons. I wasn't that keen on that, but that was her goal. So at about sixth grade, I started violin lessons with a Japanese teacher who made sure we knew that it was way too late to start violin lessons and that you'll never be any good. And my mother said, that's okay. We just want to learn, you know, we just want to take this up for a little bit. And he just, you know, kept saying, well, it's really too late. And, you know, as long as you understand that you'll never be any good, sure, I can teach you. And then I was in orchestras all through high school and then college.
Did your brother take any kinds of lessons?
He took some piano, but I think he wasn't that interested in it. He took, he was in band later on when we were in the U.S., but not so much.
Most kids, when they talk about piano lessons, talk about how much they hated to practice. Mm. Was that the case for you or not so much?
Apparently not. I actually had to practice at 6 a.m. First thing in the morning was the rule. And I don't know, I liked it and I wanted to please my teacher, so I didn't complain too much about that. Now, practicing for violin was a completely different story. I fought that tooth and nail. But Our family did a lot of singing too. That's another component of music. As a family, we sang for church as a quartet, and really early, I sang alto, and my mother sang soprano, or my brother sang soprano, and we did a lot of singing at home.
What kind of music would you be singing?
Mostly just from the hymnals. Breakfast involved devotions that involved singing a song from the hymnal most days.
So it sounds like after those 2 years in the U.S. in Iowa, you went back to Japan. Were you going back to the same place that you had left, or was it a different location?
We did go back to the same place. At that point, I was ready for ninth grade. But if you've sat out of Japanese school for 2 years, you're really not at a spot where you can go back into Japanese school. Japanese school is kind of a pressure cooker system, and I had missed out on way too much to go back. It wasn't clear my parents would want me back in that public school environment at that point either. So I went to a international school in Sapporo that was through ninth grade. I was the only ninth grader, but we met as a class of seventh, eighth, and ninth graders. That was a little rough because everybody else had been in that school for a long time, and I was just jumping in for my last year. But I learned a lot.
And were most of those students expats, or were they Japanese children? Or
there was both. There was missionary kids and some Japanese families who wanted their kids to have an American education.
So what happened in 10th grade?
Oh, so yeah, 10th grade, I went to Christian Academy in Japan, which is in Tokyo. That's a school that runs kindergarten through 12th, but starting in 10th, I went there, stayed in a dorm, loved being independent like that, loved my dorm parents. They were influential for me. And yeah, two great years there, 10th and 11th grade there, and really related to all the people that were there. We kind of spoke a mix of Japanese and English. Sometimes we called it jago. You just put Japanese and English together. But then, sadly, my parents decided after my 11th grade year that they wanted to go back to the U.S. because my brother would have been ready to go to CAJ2, and they thought, well, it'd be nice to have one more year, all of us together. And then they also, I think, gave thought to what it would be like for me to adjust to college if I didn't have a year before. So anyways, 12th grade year, I was back in the U.S., and this time we were in Chicago. Went to school there for a year, and then I was ready for college.
Tell me about leaving Japan just at the most critical point in your life and your education. What was that like for you?
Well, I was not happy about it, for sure. My class in Japan, or the class that I was a part of in Japan had always had a senior trip that was really important to them. And I was, you know, I really wanted to do that. And I really related to all those people at CAJ. And I still do. I love going to those reunions. But, you know, you do what you have to do. And I got along okay in the U.S. I, you know, joined some sports and again, a church. We joined Lombard Mennonite Church. They were super great to us. There was a big MYF there, and they took us in. So, yeah, I survived.
So you were back in public school in Chicago?
Actually, not. They put me in a smaller private school for that year.
At some point during those high school years, was there something sort of coming to the top in terms of what you might want to be studying or working at? You had said that you thought at one point maybe music.
Yeah, I think not yet, not in high school yet. I really had a hard time choosing a major or knowing what I wanted to do until later in college.
But it was also always understood that after high school, there would be college. That was never a question.
Correct. It was always, there was going to be college. And it was, Mennonite college was kind of assumed. And, you know, I've been thinking about that with my kids. You know, they had so many options, and I only remember being said, do you want to go to Bluffton College or do you want to go to Goshen College? So it was kind of the So, and I don't know, I never gave it much thought beyond that.
So where did you go?
Went to Goshen College for 1 year. Then I went to Bluffton College my next year. Then I went back to Goshen College my third year and graduated.
And that's in Indiana. One other thing just about that last year of high school, you had been in the dorm and it sounded like you enjoyed that freedom, that independence. In addition to changing schools, you were back living at home again?
Yeah, that was hard because not only was I used to my independence, but in Japan, you can get around with public transportation and go wherever you wanted to go. Now, back in Lombard, I did not have my driver's license. Other kids my age could drive. I still needed to learn to drive. And it was, yeah, and I was home under the rules of the family. And I think I made it pretty difficult for them. I was not a happy camper that year.
So when you did go to Goshen that first year, that was right after high school, that next fall?
Right.
Why did you go to Bluffton for that second year? What was going on there? I assume you were living in the dorm at Goshen.
Yes. My father took a position at Bluffton College as a professor. So I got 50% reduced tuition at Goshen. I got 100% reduced tuition at Bluffton. And I also realized that at that point I was kind of interested in a math major. And at Goshen College there were two math professors, and I could have done all my math classes with two professors, and I thought, you know what, I think I'll go to Bluffton for 1 year, save some money, and also get exposed to a few more people in my field.
And that worked out okay?
Yeah, I was in the dorm at Bluffton, just 5 blocks from home, but I met some really nice people there, too.
So you went back to Goshen for your junior and senior years and had declared a major by then?
Yes.
And was this going to be education, teaching math, or what were you going to do with this math degree?
Yeah, good question. I ended up with a math degree, and I think I just chose math because I seemed to be good at it. I didn't have a plan. So I went into my advisor at Goshen College and said, what am I going to do with this math degree? And he pulled out a little brochure that said, Women in Statistics. I said, oh, that's a thought. And he said, well, you probably would want to go to grad school for this. And I said, oh, what a great idea. And so I went to Purdue University and got a master's in statistics and really enjoyed that.
Did you start that program again just that fall? You didn't take
right.
a gap year or whatever they
right.
call it?
I went straight to Purdue.
Do you like being in school?
I do like being in school. I love being in school.
Was this a 2-year program at Purdue?
It was a 2-year applied statistics program. And when that was done, there were job options at that point. I worked at a public service Indiana as a load research analyst. That's somebody who keeps track of electric loads so that they don't have brownouts and blackouts, and they try to predict load. And that was in Indianapolis. It was an hour commute, and that was kind of miserable in the Indiana winters. So then I took a job at Purdue in the pharmacy department. They were hiring a statistician. They wanted to find out when drug prices went up, who was making all the money. So I was a research assistant for professors in their research.
And tell us again what town Purdue is in.
West Lafayette, Indiana.
Life went along. At some point, you ended up in Portland. And you got married and you had children. So give us a little more of your story then.
Well, one of the reasons I went to Purdue was because somebody who I was dating at Goshen College, who ended up becoming my husband, said, well, he would go to Purdue if I chose that. It was one of the schools he was willing to go to for his education. So Tom went there, too. And once I finished my master's degree, we were married. So then we stayed in West Lafayette until Tom got his degree.
And what was he studying?
He was studying physics. He got a PhD in physics. And then from there, I was kind of a trailing spouse. So his first job was in Cleveland, Ohio, so I went there and found work too. I worked as a registrar for a small college there. And then the product he was working on, we were there about 5 years. The product he was working on was bought out by a company in California. They offered him a job in California, convinced me that a move to California would be lovely. And sure enough, it was lovely, although I left all the people I knew behind and at that point was pregnant with my first. But we moved to Sunnyvale, California. We were there 5 years. And at that point, my husband was again offered a job in Portland. And we had been to Portland before and had known about the church, the Mennonite church. And we were really eager to be near a Mennonite church. We were attending San Francisco Mennonite Church in California, but it was an hour away, and we just didn't feel like we could participate in the way we wanted to. So we were eager to, that was one of the big reasons we came to Portland, was because of the big Mennonite church, and we were hoping that our kids would have a MYF connection and go to Mennonite camps and maybe go to Mennonite colleges, although that didn't happen.
So were both children born in California?
Yes, they were.
Were you attending a Mennonite church in Cleveland as well?
Yes, we went to Friendship Mennonite Church in Bedford Heights.
So it sounds like staying with the Mennonites is kind of important to you.
Definitely, yes. The community at every church we've been to has been so amazing, how they've reached out to us and just really taken us in at each church. And each church has allowed me to do music, and as you know, that's a big part.
So what year did you actually move to Portland?
2005.
So after you got to Portland, what were you doing for a vocation? And were there years when you were home with the children, or how was that working out for you in terms of your profession?
Before I had children, I worked full-time, and I realized that I did not want to work full-time, but I didn't want to leave a big resume gap. So I started teaching very part-time, just one class. In Cleveland, I did teach one class, moved to California, taught one class. And just as the kids got older, added class load. Once the kids were both in school, I started teaching during the day, two classes, and now the kids are up and gone. And I'm not full-time, but I sometimes do have close to full-time loads.
And what are you actually teaching?
This term, I'm teaching two statistics classes and one low-level math class. Often I teach algebra or statistics.
Turned out math was a good idea?
Yes, because there seems to be a need for math teachers, especially at the community college level.
And which school are you actually working at now?
I've been at Portland Community College now for close to 15 years.
Tell me about teaching in a pandemic.
It was a huge adjustment. Our first term, we didn't have much time to convert. We were just told to start teaching from home, and it was just hard to know how to do it well, how to relate to the students, how to have that relationship that I'm used to having. But now it's almost a year, and I don't know. I don't know if I've figured it out, but it's gotten better, certainly.
The students that you're teaching, are they right out of high school? Are they some of them a bit older, adults? What's your demographic?
It's a big mix. I have maybe half of them would be 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and then another half might be 30 and up. Depends on the type of class I'm teaching. But I really enjoy the students who are older. They come back with a renewed eagerness to learn. They know how it applies in their life, and I don't know, they care a lot more about what they're learning, and so I really enjoy them.
Is it looking like you're going to get back in person anytime soon? We're recording this mid-March, I'll just note.
I know we start a new term in 2 weeks, and that is remote. It is assumed that summer is also remote. There is hope for the fall.
And are you looking forward to getting back into the classroom?
Definitely. It'll be You know, we have learned a lot, and there are some good things about being remote. Students have access to tutoring through Zoom, which is not something they used to have. They used to have to actually go in if they needed tutoring. And how much more convenient is that to just be able to turn on your screen and stay home and to get tutoring help? So we've learned a lot. There's some good that has come from it, but yeah, I don't know. I really enjoy being with a classroom and getting to know people more that way.
If you can have a perfect day and it's not in the middle of a pandemic, how might you spend that day?
Oh, there are so many things I enjoy doing. But I know I am happiest when I'm playing tennis outside on a court. Those are some of my happiest moments. So maybe I would start with an early morning friendly doubles tennis match. And then the other times it gives me great joy is when I'm singing. So then maybe there'd be a group getting together to sing some songs or a hymn sing. I love hymn sings. And then playing games or taking a hike. I don't know. There's lots of things I enjoy doing.
With whom do you play tennis?
I'm on a women's league, so other people my level, mostly my age. We have matches on weekends and practices, and it's really just a friendly group. We're not cutthroat, but yeah.
And when did you start playing tennis?
Well, I took my first tennis class at Goshen College for PE and then played poorly for many, many, many years. And then in Portland, once the kids were in school, I thought, hey, it'd be fun to take a tennis class to improve my game. And they evaluated me and said that my form was so bad I should start at level one. I'm all the way back to the beginning. I could not believe it. But anyways, I slowly worked my way up so that I can play decently well now. I'm still certainly an amateur, but at a point where I could join a league and just have a lot of fun playing.
And how often do you get back to Japan?
Once we left, when I was a junior in high school, I hadn't been back for years and years and years. I always say when we were young, we didn't have any money, and when we had money, we didn't have any time. But about 6 years ago, I took Tom and the kids back to Japan. Just, it was time that they saw the country I grew up in, and that was a really great trip.
How long did you spend there? And were you able to kind of go back to places that you hadn't been in decades?
We were there just over 2 weeks. No, we went to Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, kind of the things that tourists go to. Our actual home is in Sapporo. That would take another flight. And our house isn't there anymore. They tore it down. And that would have been a lot of extra time and expense to go to that town. So we actually didn't. But it was more about exposing them to the culture and, you know, showing the beauty of Japan.
But do you hope to get back again at some point?
There are so many places I want to travel, and I don't feel like repeating a trip to Japan is what I want to do. That, you know, if somebody invited me to come, absolutely, I would go, and I enjoy Japan. But there are so many countries I haven't been to, so that would be my priority.
So you can get on a plane tomorrow, and it's safe. Where are you going?
There's a lot of Europe I still haven't seen. If somebody is going to accompany me, I'd be happy to see India or Africa, but I don't want to do those on my own.
I assume that you could go with someone.
Oh, okay.
Well, Crystal, thank you so much for taking the time to give us this glimpse into your fascinating life.
Glad to be here. You're welcome.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.